180s, 360s, 720s, 900s, 1080s, frontsides, backsides, frontside air, backside air, inverts, fakies, handplants, indies, stalefish, melons, weddles, mutes and a crippler. Nose grabs, tail grabs, corks, double corks, triple corks even, 1440s and double McTwist 1260s, straight airs, airs to fakies, hack and flips, YOLO flips, alley-oops, the frontside double cork 1080, and of course, a flying tomato. What do you mean you don't understand half-pipe snowboarding? This is the Winter Olympic Series, and this is the Sporting Almanac Podcast. Okay, shall we level with one another?
Yeah.
We don't know anything about snowboarding or half-pipe snowboarding specifically, so we're going to do our best.
I mean, the first episode we talked about sports that we watch once every 4 years and then don't know anything that happens in the meantime. I think this might be the best example of it because I know the X Games were a thing and I'm sure I'd enjoy them if I watched them, but I mean, it's the Olympics, isn't it?
Yeah.
You wait for this to come around, you love it for, you know, a couple of days, and then you move on to the next sport. It's not to say it's not wonderful. It's not to say it's not awesome to watch.
And incredibly skillful and athletic.
Incredibly. Incredibly. Our knowledge of it, though, yeah.
Yeah.
Could be more. But we've done our research.
But it is definitely coming out of the same drawer as platform 10-meter diving, springboard diving, certain gymnastic events, curling, if you want to use Winter Olympic comparisons. Yeah, it's not our sweet spot, but we are sports enthusiasts and our spectrum is broad.
And we have microphones, and what more do you need in this modern age?
Yeah, well, exactly. Like, we've given ourselves a platform, so yeah, you're just going to have to bear with us if you're actually a connoisseur. But yeah, half pipe. Okay, well, what do you know about it, Jack? Do you know anything, or do you want me to really try and drill into the Billy basics?
I know what a half pipe is. It's basically a ditch.
It is. With a semicircular ditch.
Which is, yeah, built into the side of a mountain, or obviously you could just build a purpose-built ramp or whatever out of snow. So I know how big it is. The walls are between 8 and 23 feet, which is, you know, about 3 meters and 7 meters.
Yeah.
So, you know, can get pretty big. The competitors, they perform tricks while going from one side to the other and while in the air above the sides of the pipe. And other than that, I think all my knowledge on snowboarding comes from the Nintendo 64 game 1080. I don't know about you.
Yeah, that and the reading that I did immediately prior to this episode.
But it's always the best way to do it.
Mate, do you know what? I actually don't think it is much more complicated than what you have said. It is, I guess, officially a freestyle snow sport, and they perform tricks on their snowboard. Obviously, there is a skis version of this as well. The half pipe is a U-shaped, we said semicircular. There is now machinery available so that you can custom make them. It's effectively hard packed snow. The athlete drops in, I think is the official phrase, at the top of the run, and they go down one side of the ramp, up the other side, propel themselves off the top of it, go as high as they can. And I think that is relevant because I think the height that you gain has two benefits. A, I think height gets you points, and B, the higher you go, the more tricks you can do.
Yeah, it's the amplitude, I think, is the correct phrasing for the height.
Nice.
You get to. So, because Olympic judging is based on amplitude, difficulty, execution, variety, and overall flow from top to bottom, which is cool.
Well, and the overall flow is interesting because the aim of the game is to string together as many tricks as is possible.
Yes.
And I mean, I guess like the cool thing about it is that there really are not actually any rules. Like, there's no time limit on your run. And it's kind of... Do you know what? It's like a playground. You just go out and you do whatever you can, whatever's within the limits of your ability, and you do it with some panache, expression, joy, really. And You just...
Yeah. Well, playground's a good description, to be fair, because it came from skateboarding, essentially. Like, the culture certainly transferred from skateboarding. Skateboarding obviously sort of came, started to popularise in the like 1970s, 1980s, and then sort of snowboarding came out of that. The first organised half-pipe snowboard contest was held in 1983 in California, unsurprisingly. So yeah, it's a relatively new sport, but this is the eighth time it's been at the Winter Olympics.
I was going to say.
It's well established.
It's well established now, but it only made its debut in 1998 at Nagano.
I remember those Winter Olympics.
Yeah, in Japan. And that's kind of fitting, actually, because I think it's a very popular sport in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Japan and America in particular.
Yes, very much so.
But yeah, like that's kind of it, really. I mean, it's the length of a half pipe varies. I think it's probably about in Olympic Games, probably about 200, 250 meters long. They go so fast and so high. It's the kind of thing where, like, and I know this is a flippant and easy thing to say, and maybe even stating the obvious, but me and you end up either dead or very severely injured if we attempt to replicate the skill set of an Olympic snowboard halfpipe athlete.
Absolutely. I've never done snowboarding and I never particularly want to. I've known a few people to do snowboarding and come out of it with some fairly severe posterior damage, shall we say.
The tailbone.
Some bruising, maybe even a chip bone or two. So you got to be brave. You're strapped into your board. It's not like you can kick it off like a skateboard.
Yeah.
You're at its mercy to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And at the mercy of the mountain. So
it's actually a unique sport in that sense, now that you mention it, in that you've got your brutal sports that exist in the world. So like your marathon running, your other long distance runs, your cycling events, where you're sort of rewarded, I guess, for your toughness, your durability, your persistence, your ability to bounce back when, you know, you get injured or you fall. And so on and so forth. There are very few sports that strike that balance between like flair and grit.
Yeah.
Like this sport rewards both in equal measure.
I think that's a really good description. I do.
Yeah. And there's one guy who's been better than everyone at this for a very, very long time. He's a winner. And the Americans love winners, as we suggested on our previous episode. There isn't anyone more synonymous with the sport. There isn't a name more famous in it, at least historically. Maybe there are some that are competitive and coming through now. But in the sort of, what would you call it? The mainstay, the everyday bread and butter household name. There's no one that competes with this guy. And his name is...
No. His name is Sean White, and his nickname is The Flying Tomato, which I have only just found out and I think is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. And his
account of the colour of his hair, of course.
Yeah, he's got red hair, exactly. And he flies, quite literally.
He certainly does.
Yeah, very interesting guy, actually. I mean, like, we thought we'd talk about him just because, again, people have heard of him because of his appearances on, you know, TV or in, like you say, computer games. But people won't necessarily know much about his career and, like, his achievements. And his backstory is just kind of interesting. It's not very complicated, but he was born in San Diego, California, to his parents, who...
A long way from any snow, to be fair, San Diego, or at least San Diego itself feels like it's a long way from any snow.
Yeah.
Well, of course, mountains in California.
Well...
Plenty of them.
And that is where this story takes us. But yeah, born in San Diego, I'm reliably informed by the internet that his parents are called Kathy and Roger. I don't know why I'm first naming them.
Excellent. His middle name's Roger as well. Presumably for his father. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I mean, we are
coincidental
guessing.
Otherwise.
We don't know Sean White. so he, yeah, anyway, his mum was a waitress. His father worked in San Clemente for the water department. This is probably sort of where your mind went when I said California and I said San Diego. His father was an avid surfer.
Yeah.
Probably a very good one. But the family also liked to spend their holidays in San Bernardino, in the San Bernardino Mountains specifically, in Southern California. As you quite rightly pointed out, California has mountains.
Plenty of them.
And they stayed in a van in the parking lot That's the car park in real English. and during those holidays, Sean White first learned to ski. How interesting. Not snowboarding.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's slightly peculiar that he learned to ski first. I guess a lot of people do. But
I guess when you're the guy who does more than anyone to popularize the sport of snowboarding, it's very difficult for you to maybe have the opportunity to snowboard when you're a child. I'm sure kids nowadays who are going to the mountains age 7 or 8 probably have a lot more access to snowboarding because of Sean White.
That's a very, very good point, actually. But it's interesting because he started snowboarding because his older brothers started snowboarding. And he just copied them, basically.
Nice.
Around the age of 6, maybe.
Okay, so still pretty young.
Yeah, still very young, but like, I don't actually know for sure because this is, I didn't write his autobiography, but it was very young. And then I think by the age of 7 or maybe a touch older, I'm not sure, he received his first sponsorship. So to say the kid was a natural.
Prodigy.
Yeah, it's a bit of an understatement.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and he basically then, not that long after, started competing in the X Games. So I think he won for the first time in the X Games at age 16.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and he won every medal. He won a medal every year from 2002 until 2013 when he was 27 in the X Games. That's kind of basically where he made his name, perhaps unsurprisingly, because it was, I guess the X Games is the only outer Olympic cycle major snow sport, extreme snow sport competition. I'm probably doing that a slight disservice, but I mean sort of like seasonal routine rather than a North American championships or an American championships or whatever. So yeah, he dominated the X Games. His medal count, if you want to know, stands at 18, which is 13 gold, 3 silver, 2 bronze. So
you know that two of those golds weren't in snowboarding. Two of his golds were in skateboarding.
Ah, okay. Yes. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't know that.
Invert skateboarding, yeah.
Good clarification.
Yeah. 2007, 2011, he won gold medals in the Summer X Games.
I mean, I wouldn't want to overstate how good this guy is at snowboarding. Jeez. only 11 gold.
Crazy.
But yes, so that's sort of like that. That's the context. That's the talent that we're operating in. But as we said,
No wait. He won 13 gold in snowboarding, and 2 in skateboarding. So he's actually got 15 X Games golds. Sorry for interrupting you.
No. That's so interesting that between us, we got the statistics right, but also wrong. I unknowingly quoted his snowboarding medal tally.
Teamwork, Ben.
And then you pulled out the extra 2 just to make sure that he got his flowers for his overall contributions to his X Games successes. But okay. Well, look, what's clear is that he destroyed everyone in the X Games. But we're not talking about the X Games. We're talking about the Olympic Games. And we're talking about half-pipe snowboarding in the Olympic Games. And we said at the very top of our series that the Olympic Games or the Winter Olympic Games represent the pinnacle for certain sports. And regardless of your successes and failures in between Olympic Games, ultimately, at least outside of hardcore snowboarding circles, your success or failure is measured by what you do at the games. Now, that's brutally unfair because people who know anything about snowboarding will be saying X Games are just as important or whatever, or like he's still a legend if he wins loads of X Games and doesn't win at the Olympics. But the harsh reality is the wider public doth give no damn about your X Games titles.
You don't transcend your sport unless you win at the Olympics. Put it that way.
And we have a story later about someone who was very successful in the X Games but strived for Olympic gold, and it's a very good story. But until then, let's talk about Sean. Turin 2006, age 19, first Olympic Games. Can you just set a marker down, get that medal in the bag early, secure your legacy, and go on to other Olympics safe in the knowledge that no one's going to be able to question your credentials? Short answer, yes.
He nearly didn't. He nearly crashed out in qualifying.
Yeah. But having got to the final, he won gold quite comfortably with a score of 46.8 out of 50, as it was under the scoring system at the time, to secure his first ever Olympic gold medal and arguably legendary status, regardless of what he would go on to do at other Olympic Games. But the story doesn't end there, because this is Shaun White, the GOAT of snowboarding. Vancouver 2010 is next up, age 23, and he pulls off the tomahawk, which I think is a very, very Northern American name for a trick. I don't really know what it is, but I'm sure if we Google it, there will be plenty of videos of it. And long story short, mate, he improved that score from his 2006 performance with a score of 48.4 out of 50, and his second gold medal back to back.
Nice.
Now an absolute legend, without doubt. Then comes
to Russia,
the dirty games. And I don't know, how do you feel about how this, like, are you suspicious of the fact that, of how this went?
Everything. Am I suspicious about everything that happened in the 2014 Winter Olympics? I don't know. I mean, brain's probably naturally wired to be suspicious, but probably not in this case.
Yeah.
Just showed he was human.
Yeah, showed he was human. He came fourth in Sochi, as we said, age 27 at that point. Or I think he was 27, depends where his birthday fell in the year. Yeah, and like, I guess some people thought that maybe that was sort of the beginning of the end, because a bit like gymnastics, I guess, and I am drawing wild parallels here because I have no data whatsoever to support this, but I get the impression it's a bit of a young man's game.
I certainly think year on year on year, it's the kind of sport where more and more young people join it as it becomes more popular. And it's a sport that it is skill and dedication that gets you further than anything. It's not physicality or stamina. So yeah, being young, avoiding injuries or being able to avoid injuries and breaks away from it, or maybe even other responsibilities at that young age as well, probably is beneficial. Yeah, so young man's game.
Yeah, and it was won, like, Sochi was won by a Swiss chap with an unpronounceable name, so I'm not going to try and say it. I'll try and say his surname, Podlachikov.
Podlachikov.
Yeah, and then
Yuri Podlachikov.
Oh, is it Yuri? Okay, nice. And then two Japanese fellas on the podium. No Americans, which is why I say I was suspicious. And there were no Russians in the final. So, yeah. And Shaun White missed out on a medal by 2 points to the Japanese fella. I think he fell in his first run, or he got something wrong, because his first run scored 35, but his second run was 90.25. Anyway, as we say, a fourth place finish. Murmurings about changing of the guard. So we go to Pyeongchang in 2018, South Korea. And I think the context to this, and I need to come up with a different word to context, because we like using that, but I guess it is very accurate, is that he was training in New Zealand.
Backstory, maybe?
Yeah, maybe the backstory, yeah.
Yeah.
He was in New Zealand, and he was training for the games, and he crashed into the edge of a super pipe.
Ouch.
Yeah, basically trashing his own face. I think he required 62 stitches. So it was a very serious injury, and obviously threw into jeopardy his appearance at the games. But despite the accident, he did qualify for the US team. And in February of 2018, he went to Pyeongchang, still sporting the scars of his training ground injury. And what did he do, Jack?
I mean,
he got it done.
He got it done. He's the only man to win three Olympic gold medals. He secured his third one with another huge score. I mean, it's a different scoring system at this point, but 97.75 out of 100. I don't have to tell you that is extremely good. bearing in mind that Palachikov guy we just mentioned got 94 to win it in 2014, so he stuck 3 points on him just for fun. One of the other medalists from the previous time, Ayumi Hirano, yeah, got the silver, and Scott James of Australia picked up the bronze. But White was actually trailing Hirano going into his last run. He only had 94.25. but despite this, I mean, it's an incredible sporting moment. Back-to-back 14-40s, and I mean, that's degrees of rotation for those who don't know. So that's enough to make me feel sick just thinking about it. And yeah, he got the job done and secured what was the 100th gold medal for the United States at the Winter Olympic Games, which is, yeah, nice little cherry on top.
Yeah,
as well.
Isn't that nice? Like, I like that. It's like a sort of a very fitting recipient, if you like, of that ceremonial medal, so to speak.
Yeah, very worthy.
Yeah. But I think the commentary on the back-to-back 1440s is pretty good. We've got some clips which we've been putting in the show notes on YouTube.
Yeah.
If you can't access the link, just put in Sean White Pyeongchang and you'll be able to see it. It's very cool. Everyone's sort of a bit stunned, really. And to do so, like, you know, with the scar of the training ground injury is pretty insane. But yeah, his Olympic career didn't actually end there. He finished fourth in Beijing. Age 35.
Do you know who got the gold that year?
I don't, actually. Who did?
It's Ayumu Hirano of Japan.
Oh, nice.
Picked up the gold that year. Yeah.
Well, that's nice. Like, I guess that is a very fitting changing of the guard that was mooted in 2014. But yeah, he announced it would be his last Olympics, but legacy secured. It ended up being his last competition altogether, in fact, and obviously quite fittingly, a standing ovation for the great man on his last ever run.
You love to see it.
To bring the curtain down on what is the snowboarding career, really. The benchmark for anyone that comes after. But yeah, that's a snowboarding story, and more specifically a Sean White story. But can I just give a mention in dispatches to Chloe Kim?
Of course you can.
Because, mate, she is the face of women's snowboarding in halfpipe now. She's a two-time Olympic gold medalist at the 2018 Games. She became the youngest woman to win an Olympic snowboarding gold medal at just 17, which is insane. And then
it's crazy. Blows my mind. I mean, you get even younger than that. It blows my mind. It blows my mind how you can be. I know young. When you're young, you feel invincible, but to have just the cojones to do it as much as anything, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is, genuinely. And if you thought that being the youngest ever gold medalist in women's halfpipe snowboarding was enough, you would be wrong. She went in 2022 to Beijing and became the first woman to win two halfpipe golds. So she is
nice.
She is the woman to beat going into this Games.
Well,
but she dislocated her shoulder.
Yes, I was going to say. Yeah. She did say she will be able to compete still, though, but it's not ideal preparation, of course, but maybe that just lends itself to another potentially incredible story.
Yeah,
we shall see.
We shall see how it plays out. I think she said that she's not able to train in the lead up to the event, but she will be competing. She's also the first woman to win two gold medals at the Youth Olympics as well, for what it's worth, and she is the current World Olympic, Youth Olympic, and X Games champion, and the first to win all four of those major titles. And this is completely irrelevant to her sporting accolade, and I don't really know why I'm mentioning it other than the fact that I didn't know it and I thought it was interesting, but I think she's dating Miles Garrett.
Oh, really? Cool. That's a power couple.
I think so. Yeah. You can verify me, but I'm pretty sure that's correct.
Do I need to check it? I mean, for those who don't know, Miles Garrett has just broken the single-season sack record in the NFL. He's a defensive end for the otherwise useless Cleveland Browns. And he managed to get 23 sacks this season, which is a record. And it was a record I didn't know would be beaten in my lifetime, because it's Michael Strahan's old record, which was equaled by TJ Watt a couple of years ago. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Power couple.
Very much so. But let's not give the last word to Miles Garrett. Let's give the last word to Chloe Kim. She is going to be one of the stars of this game. She's already a superstar. She is going to be going down in history. If there is a Hall of Fame for snowboarding, she's probably already in it. If she's not already in it, she's going to go into it. Insane stuff. If you want to see some cool things and people just flipping around in the air, looking cool whilst they're doing it, you know, saying things like cowabunga, tune in. That's halfpipe snowboarding.
I didn't know anything about it before, other than I'd seen it a little bit, and I knew Sean White, because everyone knows Sean White. I'm going to watch it this year and I'm going to love it.
And rightly so.
Carrot dangled.
Good. We're going back to the ice for the next episode, but we're talking short track speed skating and my personal favourite Winter Olympic story ever.
I might be with you on that. If it wasn't for the miracle on ice, which I've known for a long time and I love, it might be this, but this is brilliant. And I'm sure anyone who is in the know will know exactly what we're talking about. But join us next time
to find out
the story.
Okay,
find out if you're right.
See you. Yeah. See you in a little bit.
See you in a bit.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you for joining us for our Winter Olympic series. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please tell a friend about it. We'll be covering everything from speed skating to snowboarding, from ice hockey to figure skating, and much more. There really is something for everyone. Once you've done that, please give us a like, a subscribe, a share or a comment, and tune in for the rest of the series or for one of our 40-odd other episodes on the sporting world as well. Our theme tune is Oh Yeah by Harmonia Productions. You can find us on Blue Sky and Instagram at The Sporting Almanac. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the games as much as we certainly will. From both of us, goodbye for now.